Sit back, relax, get your favorite libation, your favorite snack. The Geocaching Podcast is coming at you right about now.
You want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 472, recorded live on October 28th, 2016. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat with...
That's 427, eh?
Well, the dagger.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing patron, simply click on our Patreon logo on our website to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at the Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we have all sorts of fun stuff going on tonight. So it's not like the Cubs haven't been in a World Series in 71 years. And the number one fan on the Geocaching Podcast who happens to live in Chicago may have taken some precedence and decided to take the night off so he could watch the Cubbies try to win the World Series.
He's going to be disappointed.
How are they even doing? I'm just saying, I know they lost game one. And
That's it. So this is game two.
Right.
Tonight.
So, you know, I think I saw in one of his 5,372 tweets that he has put out for the Cubs that his sons only had to wait 8 years to see the Cubs in a World Series. And obviously him and his father and the rest of them have waited a little bit longer. And it's kind of a big deal. So we're giving Scott the reprieve. Not like we could stop him anyways. He's going to be off tonight. So go Cubbies, and we'll see what happens. Apparently it started at 7 o'clock tonight, and I didn't get – that's probably Eastern or Central time. He did make a note in the show notes, though, that Cloak doesn't get off that easy. So I don't know if he's going to come to your house in Arkansas and drill you and just see how you do that way or what, but I'm just saying –
oh, he's more than welcome, but he's going to have to put a Broncos shirt on.
Yes, because football.
5-0 for Broncos, I'm telling you. I don't know what baseball is. You know, football's American icon here.
Yeah, well, I'm from Michigan, so we have the Lions. I'm just saying. So our bar is set way lower than the rest of the league. If it's like, yay, we got one, which I think is the only one we have so far this year, we're good. We're there. We're solid. We know what's going on.
If the Colts can get a friggin' offensive line together.
But nobody's bitter. That's the good thing. Yep. So if Taz sounds a little like he's talking in a mason jar, he is. His computer's at what percentage now, Chad?
Well, it's actually finally booting up now.
Right. We were at 40% not too long ago. Windows has once again decided to do a mandatory update for his computer, which mine did earlier this week. And luckily, we because of you fine folks out in the geocaching world, we have a Mac, so we don't have. It says nice things like, "Would you like to do an update? I have one for you." No, not now. Would you like to do it tomorrow? Okay, I'll check back. I love Mac. Mac is wonderful. So
Windows says that too, and then it's and if you ignore it, it says, okay, screw you. I'm not going to function at all.
By the way, enjoy this nice blue screen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you can pull all the spaghetti out later, we'll see what we can put back together if you're good. Just saying. So yeah, that's how it's going. So we're having a little bit of techno stuff, but the computer for Chad's coming up, and he'll switch over when he gets there. But we're just glad that he's here. That's pretty much it. I did not get a chance to do too much geocaching this week. We ended up doing things like going caching last weekend. We went to the North Carolina State Fair, and I've gone to like the Michigan State Fair before. I've been down here in North Kakalaki almost 10 years, and this is the first time that I actually went to the North Carolina State Fair. And oh my God, it was not only wall to wall, it was elbow to elbow people. I have never seen, literally, when you look down one of the several midways for the North Carolina State Fair, there was nothing but humanity everywhere. Like, you couldn't do anything. There was so much stuff, so many people.
It's like a giga event.
Oh, yeah, by a lot. Yeah, just I don't know how many hundred thousands they had on the day that we went, but it was just complete madness.
So did you have anybody ask you to throw a dart to win a teddy bear?
That and several other things. The only thing I did, because I actually used to, back in the old days, I actually worked with the smaller carnies. We had a string of them that come through this summer and the fall, so I used to work with those guys. So some of the stuff I know how to do and still know how to do. The one that suckers me in is the one that I remember my dad doing with you get 100 BBs in an air-powered BB gun, and he had to shoot the red star out to do it. I think out of the 12 million times that he tried it, he won once, and I have yet to win from that. And I came this close. I had one teeny tiny, I swear he must have had a red marker on his fingernail that he scraped it just to see that it was there. So I came that close this year of actually winning something. But
oh, nice. What I usually do is I'll just go early, say, here's $75.
Yeah, just give me the largest one you got.
And I'll just hand it to my daughter when she shows up.
Absolutely.
Daddy won this for you, sweetheart.
That's right. Yay.
And then I'm the hero.
There you go. Wins. And the kicker is when you can't win something like that because you just don't have the skills, and you look at every other person out there that's carrying this 9-foot-long python or the, you know, the 6-foot-long teddy bear or whatever, and it's like, oh, I suck. So, yeah. That's
and
that's
you got this. You got this 2-inch.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. It's I got the picture photo of with yeah. the USB strap from 1989. Yeah, that's the one. So that's how that goes. Anywho, let's see. Let's move on. We got lots of stuff tonight. We've got the podcast roundup, letting the viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community and what's coming up this week on Geo Gearheads. And Scott's not here to defend himself, so I'll leave it at that. But it's Geo Gearheads episode 252, Virtual Caching Bag. And I just realized all this time I'm talking, I still have the banner up. That's always good. Nobody wants to see my face anyways. Geo Gearheads 252, Virtual Caching Bag 1. We all have a few go-to tools in our virtual geocaching bag. It's time to look at some of those to keep in your caching folders on the smartphone, browser, and computer. So I'm not sure if he's just talking about Evernote or what, but it sounds like it's virtual caching stuff. All right, you'll have to listen in. So that'll be on the Geo Gearheads tomorrow on Thursday. And also on Thursday, before you go to Geo Gearheads, stop on by at the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast, where wife Amy and I will be talking about geocaching and history. There's so many people that just jump into geocaching for whatever stint of time of which they're doing, and they may not know all the nuances and things that have happened in the past and how geocaching even came to be. So we're going to take a trip down memory lane and talk about geocaching and history on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast tomorrow. So make sure you come on by and say hi. Good, good stuff.
Yeah, that'll be a good show.
Yeah, lots of stuff. I was just going through some of the things earlier today that I didn't know. So there's a lot of stuff. Really, really cool. Let's see. Please consider becoming a patron of our show. It does take money to do podcasts. Believe it or not, we can't do it on fairy dust and love. It just doesn't work like it was in the 60s. So that's how that goes. If you got a couple of bucks, please consider stopping on by to either a Patreon or a PayPal on the geocaching podcast.com website. And if you could throw us a couple bucks each month, we'd greatly appreciate it. It literally helps keep the lights on so we can continue doing on the show. Taz, you probably don't have anything on in front of you, so do you want me to do the news for you?
Yeah, please.
Okay, no problem. Let me see if I've got the... Here it is right here. Let me press this button right about here.
The news.
All right, we got a message from Chris, a.k.a. Chalk Talk, and it says, "Hey, everybody. More fun stuff is available with today's geocaching.com update. Premium memberships can now easily edit, share, and originate lists of geocaching." That's good. We enhance this feature to make planning your geocaching adventures easier with My Lists. You can sort geocache lists by name, number of caches, list status, and last modified. Toggle list notifications on and off. Set lists as public, private, or shareable. My list is in beta, meaning it's still a work in progress. Coming soon, create new lists and add geocachers to existing lists from the map and geocache listings. As always, please let me know if you have any questions. Yours in caching, Chris from Geocaching HQ. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. And we love whatever time we get any kind of tidbits of information from geocaching.com so we can pass it off to the nice folks out there. Good, good stuff. You know, we've gone through the list. We had, we are on number 4 of 4. Back a few weeks ago, we had Adam Demshire on. We had Sarah Teasdale Spittle, a.k.a. Info Ferret. Adam was Carrot Killer. Last week, we had Jesse Lunsford from Memphis Mafia. And this week, we've got Adam, and I want to say it right. Is it Schoenwald?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Got it right on the money.
See, Sarah actually brought up, because Schoenwald has a particular European type saying things, and it wasn't Schoenwald, it was something else. So I wanted to make sure I had it right.
It pronounced in German, it's Schoenwald.
Ah, but... see? I'm saying. So she was mentioning that.
Yep. And Schoenwald is the American derivative, so it works just fine.
My last name's Smith. I mean, you know, I'm just saying. So, yeah.
Only one of those.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Yeah, that's all we need. But, yeah, we have geocacher Adam Schoenwald, a.k.a. Cloak and Dagger. And we're very pleased. We have, like I said, this is going to be a very, 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 very tough vote, in my humble opinion. We've got 4 absolutely all aces people to go for the 4th spot for Geocaching Podcast. And this is going to be interesting because they've all 4 have been winners. And
I agree. After watching the other shows and listening to all the input from all of the other potential hosts, I mean, you got a tough road ahead of you. Every
yes.
one of them has something very, very unique to share.
Well,
and their personalities are so different from your hosts that you're going to have, you know. But I think you're going to have a good supply of backhand guest lists if you need that.
Absolutely, it's going to have to go that way because you guys are all too good for this. Either that. Now, in the old days, Chad, I think, was even part of that when we did it. Chad, you remember when everybody had to do their own voice tape and then send in their files, and then I would spend most of the evening, meaning we get done at 10:30, and I'd be up at 1 o'clock in the morning piecing all the people that were on the show into one combined file and then put it out that way. The quality has been so much more improved over the years that now we can get away with doing it like we are now, where I just have my Zoom recorder picking things up and it picks it up, you know, a good quality. If we got to have everybody else on too, we'd do that. I mean, we could fit eight people in here. It'd be interesting. So just saying. So we'll see what happens. We definitely need a fourth, and if we can get the other ones on whenever they can make it, that would be awesome as well too. All right, so good stuff. The way we do this, we have different questions that we have for the potential host, and then we just see how things go. And I'm going to do one of the things that I try not to do, and that's shut up. So we're going to start right off. So Adam, why don't you tell us about yourself as a person and a geocacher to kick this off?
Well, sure. As a person, my entire family is a military family. I'm a retired combat vet of 10 years in the Army as a cannon crew member. My wife, Kayla, is a retired combat medic of 15 years, and I have an 8-year-old little martial art kick butt daughter, as you guys probably know, Miss Burgundy Rose.
Oh yeah.
And I homeschool her too, so we're very much a retired family in the military, and we have a lot of time to do a lot of different things, and geocaching happens to be one of our lifestyles. As a geocacher, though, like I said, geocaching is a lifestyle for me. It's not just a simple hobby, so I'm kind of a purist in the 2.5 limited years of my experience. I've been pretty much looked at as a leader in this community. It was it wasn't a good start. It had died down a lot a bit when I had joined this area and got into geocaching. And I brought it up by doing monthly events a lot. And I'm in part of the Arkansas Geocaching Association, which is the state association for Arkansas ArcGeo. And I've started jumping in committees in there and trying to help out. Pretty much, if it's geocaching, I'm right in the middle of it, and I love doing everything I can to help promote the environment and what the spirit of geocaching has to offer.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, how did you actually get into geocaching that way? Because geocaching has different ways that it affects people. Some people, it's like, yeah, it's kind of fun. I'll get out and do stuff every once in a while. You got the other ones where it's like, yeah, not my cup of tea. And then you get other ones where people get really, really involved. And it sounds like you kind of fall under there.
Yes, sir. Really, it's kind of funny because I had seen geocaching here and there on YouTube videos and things of that nature, and I didn't really give it much thought. When I heard GPS, I was like, some kind of crazy device that I don't want to try and figure out and get lost in the woods with. So I basically said, you know, yeah, whatever. And it wasn't until I had actually met my wife, Kayla, and she didn't introduce geocaching to me. In fact, she knew less than I did about geocaching. It was a friend of hers named Electra in the geocaching world, who I had spoke to on a Facebook page. Never met her in person, still haven't met her. It's Kayla's best friend. She calls her sister. And she basically said, hey, man, you like doing all this stuff. You should try out geocaching. And I said, and so she introduced me to the geocaching app that was out, you know, the old version of it. And so I downloaded it on my phone. And I figured, why not try and go for one of the hardest caches in the area, trial by fire. So I went for 3-3 type of geocache. It was hidden, plain of sight. Don't want to give too much information out about it, but it was, it took me about an hour and a half to find, but I'm the type of person that believes in that if you just be still and just breathe, solutions come to you. And so,
or the bear does, one of the two.
Yeah, no bears, but yeah, I picked up that geocache. I was really accomplished. It was a well-designed, not an LPC PNG type of geocache. So I got what would be considered one of the cream of the crop kind of geocaches for the area. And because of that, I was like, oh, I just got to find more and more and more. And that just put the fire under my feet. And then shortly after that, I decided that, hey, there's more geocaches out here, so let's try an event. And so I went to my first event, and that's when it really took fire. I got to meet people, and I love talking to individuals and scratching their heads on what they got for ideas and all that kind of stuff, and it just took off from there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, having a good cache early on is very, very influential in getting cachers to stick around. And then if people will go out to events and start talking to other geocachers and talking about their experiences and trading stories, that's just awesome.
In the area that I live in, we have so many influential geocachers now. Like I said, we're hosting geocache events every month. I'm actually holding two events this weekend. So it's constantly busy. We have a wealth of talented geocachers like Doc Firewoman.
Oh, yeah.
As you know, she lives in the area that I live in. Brandy Jack, Xander Sooners. I think that you've even spoke to Fox Photo Pro a few times in Reboot. So we got some really good geocachers and a great organization up here. So it makes all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. And then when you get into that potato chip phase, just another one. Just another one. Just another one. And away you go.
And then I started doing streaks. That's another story. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But
yeah. It's geocaching is amazing. It's great. It has certainly got my unhealthy butt off the couch and started going out and exploring and just seeing things that I didn't know existed in my own backyard. But usually that's what people will catch fire to, is like, oh, I didn't know this was here.
Exactly.
I lived here for 20 years and this has been here all this time, you know? And so it's gone from that to, no, everybody needs to know that this is here. You know, you don't know this. I got to show this to you. Learn about geocaching.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's where it goes. Yeah.
That's awesome. So now you're from Arkansas, or at least living in Arkansas.
I am from South Dakota, but Arkansas is I call home state now because I've been here for 20 years.
Yep.
And geocaching in Arkansas is just amazing. You know, a lot of people go, Arkansas, really? You know, isn't that between Texas and Tennessee? Well, I was like, yeah, you know, but Arkansas is such a diverse area for geocaching. And I had recently completed the 75 county challenge. You know, Kayla and I, my wife, Doc Gunny, completed that. And we had got to learn so much about Arkansas that a typical person, if you weren't drived to go see every county, you wouldn't learn about.
Right.
You know, and so being able to say I've literally been all of our Arkansas is actually something I'm very proud of. It's a beautiful state. It's got the Ozark Mountains in the north and the river valleys and even the rice lowlands. For example, I didn't know that Arkansas was one of the nation's leading producer in rice.
Really?
It just never struck my head. Or that Arkansas is one of the biggest game duck hunting to go to destinations. I never knew about any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's because of geocaching and going to all these areas and seeing all these different things and truly being there instead of just reading it out of a text. Geocaching has really brought a lot of history and a lot of new areas to my mind that I wouldn't have ever thought about even accomplishing, you know. And well,
definitely
they go, and well, they say, well, you're landlocked in Arkansas, so you can't find an ocean cache. It's like, well, we have scuba dive geocaches in Beaver Lake as well.
There you go.
If you're a diver, Arkansas has that too. It's really great.
That is amazing. Wow. Yeah, the Chad, I think, has, he said there are 75 counties in Arkansas. He started off in a little state of Texas.
I had a few friends saying that they wanted to try Texas with over those 100 counties, and I was like, good luck to you.
Oh,
254 counties, and to drive from every county, it's something like over 9,000 miles. And that's not to get to the caches. That's just to be able to
go from county to county.
Every county.
9,000 miles.
You're driving across the nation like twice, I think, or something like that. That's insane.
And then you move to another small state like California.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's about 150 counties here or something. Wow. Well, no, not that many. I forget how many. It's close to 100 counties, but it's only somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,000 miles of driving.
Wow.
But that's a good coastline to drive, though. I wouldn't mind trying to get some of those counties in there. It seems like the next goal that I have for counties are probably because of where I live in the northwest part of Arkansas. I got the luxury of going after Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri. So we're really working on Missouri right now. We really enjoy it. Kind of missed having to go to GeoCoin Fest. That would have been about another 13 to 20 counties to pick up, but there's always another time. So,
wow.
But now, you know, go ahead.
Do you do a lot of traveling when it comes to?
Well, I'm trying to. Right. I have a wife who's pretty beat up from her military injuries. And so the Arkansas County Challenge took us about 8 to 9 months to complete.
Right.
Which for some people, that seems like a terribly long time. But we paced ourselves. Like there was one day we decided that we'd just drive to Shreveport and pick up counties and just see Shreveport for a day. So that was like, you know, it turned out to be a 14-hour drive geocaching, obviously. But, you know, it was a fun drive, and we had recently gone to Florida for vacation, so we picked up a lot of counties going to Florida and enjoyed that and picked up several states, too. So we try to travel, but it's just really dependent on how we're feeling that day and how many miles.
Oh, absolutely. Totally know how that goes. And that goes just for me with that. So yeah, when you try to take the whole family now, Burgundy must love, does she even get into the geocaching part of it? Cause she's chopping wood in her own way.
Yes, she is. She's really good at that Taekwondo stuff. But as far as geocaching, if it's not an ammo box, or something, she is not interested. We're going geocaching today. Daddy, is it an ammo box or a PNG? You know, do we have to walk in the middle of the woods?
Oh, I love it.
Or are we going to be in the car for hours? Because one of my things that I have set up is my Country Wild geocache series, and it actually encompasses the four-state region, which is about 200 miles.
Wow.
Right now. It's not finished, but that's about where I'm at in this big circle. And there's about 130 to 140 geocaches on that trail. And so when it comes for time for doing maintenance and stuff like that, it's like, all right, I'm doing maintenance. He wants to go with me.
I love it. Now, just out of curiosity, for setting up a trail like that, how do you even start finding spots to put things? I mean, do you just – what do you do?
Well, when I was doing the trails, it was actually my first geocache hide. I wanted to do something different. There wasn't a lot of geo trails that I was familiar with in my part of the state. And so I was like, let's do a trail. And I didn't want it to be a power trail where you had to stop every quarter of a mile and pick up a sign cache, so to speak. I really wanted to point out something different. But I still wanted it to be easy enough for people to go and find without having to, you know, spend a lot of their time and miss out on the drive. So how I planned it out really was just I didn't expect it to become four states by any stretch of the means. I had started out just going, let's just go to the Oklahoma border, which is about 20 miles from me, and we'll place things that I found interesting that was themed. Because my trail is Country Wild, I wanted to theme everything country. So if the road was named something country, I would find information about that and do a theme with that to tie in with the geocache. Or if there was some unique interesting thing or a law about the state, like you can't walk a chicken across the road, I would mention strange things like that. As it grew in the popularity, I just started hiding more and continuing more. And as a cache owner, I saw myself develop better hides. And so it just kind of grew as I hid. Now sure. It's this out of control beast where I just go.
So. How did I get into this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you start getting up to that many geocaches, especially when you're in areas that the seasons change so dramatically. Because you've got areas in there with lots of snow, lots of warm, lots of everything. So the geocaches have to be prepared to survive all that stuff. That does take a lot of work.
It does. And one of the things that I really strive and I'm very proud of as a cache owner is that I do have a good network of friends that will let me know if a geocache is out of place or out of sorts and is willing to replace it. Like, you know, 200 miles away, I can't really mm-hmm. go to it in today. I might get it this week, but, you know, yeah. So I have really a great network of friends in the area that are just a big help. And it's important when you have something that big to have a team like that work with you and for you on those things.
Oh, yeah. You almost have to for something like that.
Cool. Well, I'm lucky. I really am lucky. I have there's people here that are just genius puzzle builders and genius gadget cache builders where one particular favorite of mine, a geocache hider, has hid it in a parking barrier. He had totally formed this parking barrier, poured it himself, and placed it at a location. And I'm one of those first to find kind of guys. I'm a first to find hound. And so when it popped up, because I have my favorite geocachers, just like everybody, when they hide their things. And when his popped up, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And he lives about 55 miles from where I do. Well, the cache was about 55 miles from where I was. I got in my pajamas. It was foggy. And I didn't have any gas hardly at all to get me to and back, but I was going to get that geocache. And when I finally figured out where that nasty little burger was, it was like, oh my gosh, aha, that was so cool.
Yeah.
Picture, you know, the city's finest came out, you know, and wanted to know what I was doing in my pajamas in the middle of a parking lot with an out-of-state license, you know.
Nothing. So,
just checking it out, you know, kind of thing. So,
this is a nice barrier. Yeah.
I'm looking to steal this barrier.
It's a... Yeah, this is a nice barrier. You got good barriers here, sir.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, or like, you know, it's like they had there's a couple of Goodwill boxes there, you know, it's like, I just ran out of clothes.
Wash day. Yeah.
No, it's great, you know, and I cannot say enough about the people in this area that just do so many amazing things. And so, you know, when you're developing trails and geocaches and puzzle caches and stuff like that, where you get favorite points because they're truly unique and genuine and they want to see more of that. That just pumps you up to hide better and go more and find more.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things that I like to try and do at that point in my geocaching career, if you will, is to just embody those feelings onto everybody else. And so one of the key important events for me is to really push events,
right,
community events. And so that is really what I try to do in segue of finding geocaches and hiding them. It seems more after I have completed my 366 streak, which sucked, but I just want to do events, you know, and I really enjoy bringing people together and teaching geocaching and showing what you can do with geocaching. It's not just simply a pill bottle or an ammo can. Like one of the events that I held, I have a geocaching page where I challenge people in my area and in the 4-state area to try and make a unique geocache. And one of those was a fairy house build.
Oh, I love those.
And so we had a good amount of people that had I'd given them 4 months to build this fairy house geocache, and that they have to hide it. They can't just simply make it
right
and go, okay, it's a geocache, but I'm not going to hide it. They had to make it and hide it. And Doc Firewoman had put this amazing pebble by pebble stone house, everything that you would expect a fairy house to go through. And she's going to hide it in the library. or a public building like that, so it stays really well. And the prize for that was the geocaching mushroom container that you have seen, like, at the geocaching store.
Yeah.
It's a mushroom, and you can hide a geocache. And it actually went with the house that she built. And so that's how that's going to be done.
That's
and,
awesome.
Like, this weekend, we have my group, Cloak & Dagger Geocaching, cheap plug.
By all means.
We adopted our first park for Bentonville, Arkansas. And we have several other parks that we're working for or in the cities trying to adopt in trails, so that we really have a community influence through geocaching. It's just not some bomb squad blew up cache kind of a geocacher. That's another story. But,
yes, that but, is.
But yeah, you know, it's like, so I got Saturday, I got a CETO. Sunday, I got a pumpkin carving contest. And then I have an event next month for Sanders Sooners. They had found their 1,000th geocache. So anytime a local geocacher makes a milestone, I really try and make it a big deal, because it is a big deal.
Right.
And if you don't hold events like that, you don't congratulate and bring people into the light and stuff like that, geocaching can get boring.
Yeah.
You know, so right. That's what we try to promote in the area. Like, one of my friends had just done a huge costume party with a bonfire, an outdoor movie, trophies, all that kind of stuff. And it was great. It was an amazing event, and people had a lot of fun and enjoyed themselves, and there was a potluck. So geocaching really is whatever you decide to bring into it. And it can be a simple PNG, or it can be an event. Like a real event. And that's really what I like about geocaching.
That's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. And it's interesting because one of the things that Google does is it pulls, if you save your photos on Google Photos, it'll pull stuff out from 7 years, 8 years, whatever, and make a little collage on it. And I was looking at one that I put out on Google a couple days ago from 7 years ago. And it was exactly like you said there. It was around Halloween. It was NCGO had their fall fling late that year, so it was literally Halloween weekend. And so they had a huge Halloween bonfire, the whole shot. And how amazingly cool those type of events are. And things have – maybe it's just from what I've seen, but it's kind of like they've calmed down. They haven't – they don't have the same fervor. It's a shame, and it takes an individual to go out and say, no, let's get this back going again to do stuff. So yeah. That's definitely a big inspiration.
And I think that's what happened to Northwest Arkansas before I really arrived on the scene. There wasn't really anybody doing events. There wasn't any new geocaches really being hidden. It seemed like it was the exclusive few that still geocached because they had been geocaching forever kind of
right.
a thing. And so getting people involved in that and showing them, like you had said, the fervor of getting into it, to the heat of a geocache and the enjoyment of it, and not just hiding PNGs, but hiding letterboxes and earth caches and night caches and stuff. That's
right.
Really what we try to do. And we work together. We don't work against each other and that kind of a right. thing. And so when you have a whole community trying to build something and make it something bigger than it is, it's going to flourish
yeah.
no matter what.
Absolutely. Right.
Sounds like you did a nice job reinvigorating the geocaching community there.
Well, and I can't take all the credit for it. I mean, I had a lot of help from a lot of friends, and it just seemed like it hit at the right time, and everything meshed together well, and we just started talking in events. And it's the events of people coming together and matching that name with that face and going, "You're Cloak & Dagger. I've seen your name anywhere."
Yeah.
Or, "You're this person or that person." And "Oh, I have a question about your geocache." Or,
yeah.
You know, and that's what makes the community a thriving community, is when you can get events pulled together and do things like that.
Couldn't agree more. And nowadays, it's not just being able to do events, but also to get into the social interweaves and get the word out that way. I know you've got some stuff going on with that as well, if I remember right.
Yeah. Like I said, I was a member. I am a committee member of Arkansas Geocaching Association, ArcGeo. That's a really great nonprofit geocaching organization for the state. I am several members of Facebook groups that I try and help with. And in order to be involved in something like this, you really have to get your name and you have to spread things out and,
yes,
and bring into the limelight all these little groups that spur off of each other and stuff like that. And for me, my Facebook page, again, cheap plug, Cloak and Dagger Geocaching. I try to post all of the events in the four state area, and I try to get people involved with those. And now I'm at the point where I was approached by some of my geocaching friends, and because I was holding annual events now, and they were getting pretty big, and they said, "Hey, you know, you do pretty good at these events. We have some ideas, and we want to bring this into our town. We want to bring more people here, and let's get together and try and do a mega."
Right.
So that's where we're at now. We're trying to create a mega event, and so we're delving into all of the logistics and stuff like that to get everybody involved, the vendors involved, getting the geo coins and the path tags and all the games and building the art and stuff. And it's a daunting task. And if you don't know what you're doing, it makes it really hard. So a lot, yes, of the times we find ourselves kind of batting at the fences and just hoping that we make it, you know. And this is we have this event planned for next year. And we have a lot of great people working on it. We got a web designer, Tamisha Geocacher. I don't know if you've seen her vlogs or not, but she's going to be working with it. And we have a couple of great guys that are just in the know of who's who,
right,
to bring into it. So we got our vendors, and we got like our porta potty guys, because you know somebody's got to go to the bathroom. So you don't even think about those kind of things when you're doing a smaller event, but when you start wanting to bring in more than just 15 or 20 people or so, you know, you really have to think about all those little things. Where are they going to park? Where are they going to eat? Where are they going to go to the bathroom? All those kind of things.
Yeah.
And so it brings a whole new dynamic. And we have a rocking team. It's not very big right now, but we're going to try and make it happen.
Yeah, the type of people, and you absolutely have to know folks like that to pull off a bigger event. WV Tim is one of the people that comes off the top of my head for that. Memphis Mafia put together geocaching Woodstock for last year. There is a wonderful, wonderful lady known by Tater Tot here in North Carolina who has put across the Civil War Geo Trail here. She just did the SOB Trail down in South Carolina. Amazing, amazing woman that goes through and knows how to set up things like that. So you really do have to know the key people, because otherwise you have no idea
what you're running. You hear that, Memphis Mafia? I'm coming for you. I'm going to ask you a lot of questions.
Oh, yeah, I'm telling you. Yeah, because he definitely it was a learning experience, and I'm sure he's got notebooks worth of stuff to share for stuff like that. Let's see. Moving on, we also have geocaching topics you feel strongly about, either pro or con. Now, one of the things in the geocaching podcast, if you've listened to us more than one show, we tend to show our feelings when it comes to whether good, bad, or indifferent about certain subjects. And as long as it's kept in a fairly PG level, we get along and go through that. But are there different ones that you feel strong about?
Strongly, I really love the community development and taking care of our environment. It is the most important thing for me. I've been doing a lot more CETOs, and one of the things that Arkansas has is Keep Arkansas Beautiful. It's a statewide litter pickup commission kind of a deal, and so they'll send in the trash bags and all the cool swag and T-shirts for you, and so I really try and work that part of CETO,
right,
or CITO, however you pronounce it. And our city, Bentonville, is doing a 1,000 tree growing program. I just got in touch with the key people there. And next year, we're going to take that by storm. We're going to try and get at least 50 to 100 geocachers out planting trees for free.
You know,
they already dig the holes. All you have to do is put the trees in, tamp the dirt around, and then go. So we're really trying to do events like that. And again, it's for me, the key component of geocaching is events, bringing new faces, the old faces, doing the 101s, the meet and greets, you know, showing off the shinies, that kind of a deal. And it's bringing people together that are usually either recluse or shy, or and just saying, hey, you have a family here. It's okay to geek out about these kinds of things. It's normal.
Yes.
It's an addiction. Go for it. We will help you, you know, kind of a thing. And that is what I love about geocaching, is bringing the people, the community together for common goals and enjoying themselves and being in a family setting.
Absolutely.
Cons, you know, as we had kind of briefly discussed before the show, one of my worst things that I just cannot stand as a geocache hider is the TFTC logs, the yups, the emojis, that kind of thing. And I have gotten myself into serious trouble with Groundspeak a few months ago, because I was just getting upset with these people who would just go and give me a smiley face. And, I did the cardinal sin. I deleted their logs, and that's a big no-no. So I had to temper my attitude about that and adjust it and fix it. And I sat there and talked with the people at Groundspeak. You know, I said, you are the rule makers. You are the game planners. You know, you don't like this rule. You try and tell everybody in the caching etiquette, logging etiquette, even in your glossary, to write a couple logs. I mean, the geocaching log is a cache owner's bread and butter, just like applause is for an actor.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't know how we are doing by a TFTC. We don't know how we are doing by a smiley face.
Yep.
For all we know, you absolutely hate the cache, or you didn't find any fun in it, or maybe you did, but because what you didn't write doesn't help us.
Right.
You know, and when I get those kind of logs, go ahead.
Yeah, it annoys me as well, but you know, I usually temper that with, is this a newbie cacher that really hasn't gotten the experience and put out caches and started getting those themselves and start the realization process? I didn't start realizing it until probably 50 or so caches in, and then I actually went back and updated some of my old logs that I knew were, you know, TFTC crap logs. And you know, I kind of temper my attitude towards the people that are new. And then, someone who's got 20,000 cash fines and sends a TFTC, it's like,
yeah, they're boilerplating TFTC.
I've seen a couple nice logs, nice log, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not referencing the new people, because I even made that mistake. And like you, I have gone back and fixed my logs, thanks to Project GC letting me know what my small logs are and stuff like that. So it's my issue is with the people who have found, you know, at least 300 or 400 geocaches. Mm-hmm. You know, usually at 100 geocaches, I already knew how to write a log. I've seen enough of the logs, good logs and bad logs, to know that a cache owner wants to read this, you know? And so it's like, as a cache owner, I understand how much work it can take. Some people I've seen people slop geocaches together, and those are absolutely worthless in my opinion. And another topic of disgust, but it's one of those things where if a cache owner takes the time to either write in the log, in the cache page details, or takes the time to build you a puzzle and maintain it and keep it going, you know, you have a tools of the trade bag for a reason. You can replace the logs. You can replace the pencils. If there's no swag in it, you can put extra swag in. You know, it's one of those golden rule things. Do as you would have others do unto you kind of thing. So right, I try to live by that. And so,
and I go out and find a lot of puzzles. So, and a lot of those don't get, you know, only get hit one or two times a year. So I'm always trying to make sure that I give details about what the condition of the cache is, because the cache owner is not going to be running out and checking every one of his puzzle caches all the time. And, but you know, they need to know if it's starting to deteriorate or not.
Absolutely. And I love geocaches that let me know, even if it is a wet log, you know, hey, you got a wet log, it needs replaced. Yeah, it kind of bothers me a little bit in that kind of aspect. But at the same time, you know, at least they let me know so that I can go and have it done. Or at least another geocacher who is coming, looking to find it, can bring a log with them and hopefully take care of that.
Sure.
Right. And which I've been relying on for a bunch of my caches in Texas.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's like I'll ping a cacher, say, "Hey, you want to go out and find this cache here? Can you bring a logbook?"
Yep.
Yeah, there exactly. And I that's one of the things, you know, I think that I developed as a geocache creator is in my tools of the trade. I do have like my own version of a Dr. B's repair kit, and there's so many things online that you. Materials that you can print for free for logbooks and all that, you know, and it's not hard, you know, and anybody can grab a piece of paper out of the car. There's always a piece of paper in your car somewhere that you can just throw in the geocache and place the log. But that is my big pet peeve as far as geocaching is concerned, and I can go on and on about that. But on a lighter note, I think one of the hardest things that for me was the streak, the 365, 366 day streak. After completing that streak, I have never felt geocaching as work until I had to do that streak. And there were days where I was sick and I was tired and the weather sucked.
Yeah.
And I still went out there and got it. And now that it's done, I will never, ever do a streak like that again.
There you go.
But it's good stuff. I'm happy about it.
That's awesome. All right, last one. Well, actually, I still have one that I'm going to keep in the back pocket here just in case. But I did want to know about the as far as why you feel that you would be a good host for the Geocaching Podcast.
You know, that is really a great question, and I love that you asked that from everybody. As you stated in the last episode, and in this episode as well, that everybody is a spot-on geocaching host. They bring to the game something unique and something fun. And so what would set me apart from everybody else, I really honestly can't really give you something like that, because I have a fervor just like everybody else does.
Yeah.
You know, we have a love for the game. We have a love for the sport. Some of us are pure. Some of us just say it's a game. You know, I kind of fall somewhere in between there. But, you know, and I've only been doing it for 2.5 years, as where some of those hosts have been doing it for much longer. Really, for me, I have that fever. You know, I bring that I've brought geocaching back with friends into an area, and I have that zeal and zest to want to bring it forward. And, you know, I kind of fit in with you guys. You guys are all nuts, and so I kind of fit in with that as well. But, you know, as far as being a host, on a serious, serious note, I want to be a host. You know, I have the time to be a host. I'm 100% retired. Geocaching is my life. I want to bring as much information to people as I can. And I find that being on your show, or any podcast for that matter, where you can bring geocaching into a bigger audience, I want to be a part of that project, not just as a guest host, but as a contributing host into this. And I think that I can match that. And I have no problems picking on any one of you guys.
Awesome. So. See, that's a prerequisite.
Cool. Yeah, speaking of picking on people, looking in here, in the show notes here, they're talking about not only being a host, but also guest host for eventually kicking me off the island.
Well, I was trying to leave that out, but you know.
Did Scott put that in there?
I wanted to put that in there and pick on you a little bit, but I figured we might be going long, so I cut it short.
Awesome. And yeah, nobody gets kicked off the island. I'm just saying. No, it's awesome. The one thing before we do let you go with all this, you have, and you're absolutely right. Each one of the hosts' potentials has their own absolute glorious uniqueness to themselves that would make any one of them a perfect host for this.
Absolutely,
you have something that they have not mentioned. And I have to bring this up. You are the only geocaching potential that I know that's actually had their geocache blown up by the police.
Oh, dear Lord. Yeah. It's a funny story with that.
Please tell.
A friend of mine, Sandra Sooners, had sent me a message and goes, "Did you hear in the news?" I was like, "What's that?" It's like, "Somebody's geocache got blown up at such and such a place." I won't give out names. And I was like, "Oh no, are you serious?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "That must be a newbie geocacher." Like, they didn't ask for permission. Something didn't look right. About a week later, I found out it was mine. I went to the city and talked to him. I was like, "Look, I have a permit for this. Here it is. You gave me a permit." He said, "Yeah, we don't know why that this happened. Someone picked it up. It was an ammo box. It was labeled as a geocache."
Yeah.
It had $75 worth of swag in it.
Oh no.
But the gardener thought that, you know, "Hey, you know, I don't know what this is. I'm going to call the bomb squad." They had the thing corded off, apparently. I wasn't there, obviously. I'm getting this secondhand. Had it corded off and had a little plastic pieces left of what the geocache was.
Oh.
And so, yeah, I had a geocache blown up by the bomb squad.
I think you should get a special souvenir or geocoin or badge of honor or something saying, "I've had my geocache blown up by the police."
It's not a bomb. It's one of the running jokes that I get from all of my friends is I'll get pictures of geocaches with like fake dynamite sticks taped to it and go, "Hey, Cloak, is this some of your geocaches?" You know, and I have not lived that down since. So I just go with it and I have fun with it. And I go, cool.
That is
definitely locals here that got theirs blown up. Managed to get a hold of some of the remnants and turned it into a trackable.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. It was funny because just recently another geocache had the bomb squad scare going on, and of course, my Facebook page got just blown up with messages. "Hey, Cloak, is that one of your geocaches?" It's like, no.
Well, it definitely is an icebreaker that you can go to any geocaching event and just start it up.
You know, right? You know, it's just like that would be the perfect bingo piece.
Yes.
Yeah. I had a geocacher that had a geocache blown up by the bomb squad.
Yeah, so that was on a geo bingo that we had for Remembering 9/11 event. And it's like, now, I know that person because he has a trackable.
Yeah.
Wow. Unbelievable. All right. So just as we wrap this up, anything else that you'd like to talk about or bring up before we say good evening?
Yeah, I would really like to know, did Amy hide Christmas?
Oh, the great Christmas conflict. You know, I actually looked up literally today. I looked up because apparently Chris Moose, I couldn't remember where we got him. And right. Chris Moose actually was sold at Rite Aid. And I must have been in a Rite Aid somewhere and saw it, fell in love, and the Chris Moose saga continued. I am literally going to take, I have to before it gets too much darker, I'm going to literally take the entire storage unit apart piece by piece. There's not a whole lot in there, but there's enough that he could be safely hidden without me knowing, and see if I can rescue him. If not, at least I have him in my YouTube video for him and have memories of Christmas, because you can't get him anymore.
Well, I got threatened by Miss Amy just recently because I was talking to her on a Facebook message and it said, you know, don't tell Andy this, but I have a version of Chris Moose that I'm going to mail to him. She goes, oh, dear God, you better not. So expect a package in the mail.
Yes. Yes. I am still deeply, deeply saddened and miss my little armpit farting Jingle Bells Moose companion.
He's a little more PG rated. He's not farting, but he's got bells on his
hands. He's got his hands and he's doing the armpit thing. And oh, yeah. It's awesome. You can't be classy like that. I'm just saying.
No, that's elegant.
It is. It's elegant in its own magical way. Yes. And I will find him one day. Maybe somebody, someplace on eBay or somebody will give him up. But
might want to look under the bed. She probably got him hidden under the bed.
I still think Memphis Mafia is involved somehow with this. I just know it. They're not giving it up either. It's discouraging.
He's probably having way too much fun with it himself.
Oh, I'm thinking. I was just starting to expect Polaroid pictures of him, you know, bound
with
and gagged.
With a ransom note.
Yeah, ransom note. If you ever want to see the moose again, Moose and Squirrel. All right. Good, good stuff. Well, thank you, Adam, so much for coming on by. Your excellent, great, great choice, too. And so, folks, this is how we're going to do this. I'm going to set up next week, and we'll give all the details out next week. And we will have all four on the website on geocachingpodcast.com. And basically, you're going to end up sending in an email with your choice of who you want. And yes, you have to choose one. We already know they're all good. I'm just saying you're going to have to choose one. The viewers and listeners are going to have a vote. Each one of the hosts here are going to have a vote if they don't get voted off. And then we will come up somehow with a magical winner. But like I said, we're going to have substitutes. We're going to have you guys back because you're all wonderful. And I'm not just saying that because it sounds good.
It's been an honor, and I really appreciate it. It's great to finally be able to talk to you guys.
Absolutely.
I've spent something that I've been wanting to do for a long time. So as a guest or a regular, you know, give me a call anytime. I'd be
excellent.
To do it.
Excellent, man. Sounds good. Great. And we need more blowing up stories. I'm just saying. It gets a little dull around here. All right. For Scott Burks, who's probably listening and probably wallowing in his own sorrows, this one is for you. And then we'll wrap this puppy up. All right, folks, we hope you enjoyed it. We had a good time. And again, thanks to Adam. Thanks to Chad. And Scott is somewhere in hopefully Chicago heaven going through and having fun with his cubbies. So hopefully we'll see him next week as well because the World Series goes for how long? You know, a couple weeks?
Too long.
So, yeah, hopefully this will be over. Kind of like the election. I'm not going to go that way. All right, let's move on. Here we go. Thanks, folks, for stopping on by, and we'll see you next week on the Geocaching Podcast. Let's do this. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Chad Courtney. This show is copyright 2016 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved. Go Cubbies. Go Cubs.